This is Empowered Human Academy. Welcome home. We're here to create a life that feels like ours, one that calls us onward and upward because we are living as ourselves, fully and only. I'm Isaac.
And I'm Abe. These conversations are where we explore what it means to be alive and how to stay close to that aliveness with every breath. So, with hearts wide open, let's begin.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Hope you're safe, cozy, well, and grounded wherever you are right now. Sending you so much love through the airwaves.
Y'all, I've known today's guest since childhood, and after all those very full years, it is my absolute and unqualified delight to bring you this conversation today. Rebecca Freilich is a chef and the owner of Mara's Cafe, based in Wisconsin. She's a powerhouse business owner and is crystal clear about her values. She's only interested in opportunities that deeply align with her intuition. Alongside her business endeavors, she's also a mom, wife, and lover of plants, sunshine, good coffee, and tacos. Rebecca thinks in flavor profiles and makes decisions with the inner compass of integrity. She's made it her mission for her insides to match her outsides, and it's working. She's only growing more unstoppable the more she lives what she knows.
Throughout this conversation, we discuss moving beyond fundamentalism, getting clear about your values, how her business outlived the failed date that she had in mind, the difference between hope that's native and hope that's handed, listening to your gut, and surviving domestic violence.
I've seen many iterations of Rebecca as she's evolved over the years, and she is genuinely shining brighter than ever. Despite the darkness she's encountered in her past, the native and very real hope inside her never went out, and today it's brighter than ever.
Before we dive in, an important note. We talk about domestic violence in this episode. If you or someone you know is currently experiencing this, please reach out to someone and get help. We've linked the domestic violence hotline in the show notes. Rebecca's story is a powerful reminder of the sparkle inside all of us that can't be put out, and we know her resilience and her power is going to move you. We can't wait for you to get to know her. So, let's get into it. Rebecca Freilich, hello. Welcome to this conversation that we're having on air.
For those of you who are not watching on YouTube, you're missing the most radiant smile. Rebecca, it's wonderful to see you. The smile is yours, to be clear. I'm also smiling radiantly, but I'm talking about our dear friend, Rebecca Freilich. Hi.
How are you today? Rebecca, we've been friends for a long time, and I'm excited to spend the next kind of 45 minutes to an hour with you and just chat about life. And that's what's really beautiful about this part of our project is that we get to speak with folks that we don't know and also folks that we do know about subjects that we're passionate about. So how's it going? What is up? What's on your mind?
It's going well. I'm super excited to be here. I feel so honored. You all have such amazing guests on your podcast. So I'm like me. I feel really special. So glad to be here.
You are incredibly special. I've had the great privilege of knowing you for a while, which makes this doubly special for me personally. And we'll get to some of that more later. Maybe we'll find out. But we begin, as we always do, with a question of core identity. We're looking for the words that feel the most like you, not when you're inhabiting a role, not when you're having to be something for someone, when all external expectations and obligations and all of that are put to the side. It's just you hanging out in your own internal space that feels like home. What words of identity feel like they fit?
I am a learner, for sure. And kind of along those lines, I'm also a very curious person. And I would also say, when I feel most like myself, I feel sparkly. But I just feel that, like, inside, I just feel sparkly.
I love that. Can you add more words to that? What does sparkly feel like?
It's this kind of, I think, like grounded confidence, but also like, I mean, most people I don't think would describe me as like an extremely bubbly person. So maybe it's like an inner sort of bubbliness.
Hmm. Oh, I love that. That makes, like, to me, having known you for a while, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm overjoyed hearing you talk about that. What's your history with that sparkle?
It's been a journey for sure. Something that for a long time I tried to dull and felt like almost like it was kind of a maybe dangerous isn't right, the right word. threatening sometimes. And it felt like safer to not be sparkly. But as I've grown and processed and done therapy, I've learned, like, I think we all have our way to sparkle in the world. So just learning what that looks like for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Sparkler, learner, curious. I mean, there's a natural connection between learner and curious, and let's talk about that in a minute. Is sparkly also part of that, or am I looking for too many associations here?
No, I think they're all connected. I think it's also a sense of, I think, like, playfulness, you know, that's tied in with sparkly and learner and curious. It's, I guess, kind of a way to go through life that's not so, like, there are hard things and there are serious things for them. But I don't know, when I approach life with some level of playfulness and curiosity, like, life's just more fun. It's better.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a better human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that completely makes sense. When I first met you, you were at least externally less sparkly. And you talked about, like, there was a time when you felt like it would be dangerous to live that way. And it's not my intent to, like, dwell on what was in any sense, but I know that I'm already using too many of my own words. Like, tell me about, like, the importance of, in your own words, like, the importance of all of this in your present day relative to what you've experienced, the choices that you've made. Like, why is it, actually, I'm already using my own words here. What I want to say is, why is it important to engage with being a learner, being curious, being sparkly? Is important the right word for that? Is it important to be in those places for you? So I guess what's the significance of holding those words in your day to day, and how does that relate to, like, your story over time?
Sure. So I think a lot of my upbringing and my history, there was always this sense that I needed to be very certain about a lot of things. And so over time, with growth and processing and all sorts of things like that, I think I've just sort of, in many ways, let go of that need for certainty. And that allows curiosity to come in, for one. It allows me to just hold things in a much more open-handed and playful manner. Because when you have to be certain about everything, like, that takes a lot of the playfulness out of things, for sure. Takes away your ability, I think, to learn and be curious. Because if you already know, like, what's left to learn? So absolutely. Like, it's been both a process of unlearning and relearning and just approaching life in a much more playful and open-handed way.
That makes sense. Why was certainty important? Like, what function did that serve at that time?
Well, I mean, for me, a lot of it was, like, very conservative faith background. And just, you know, just having to know the correct answer for everything.
Mm-hmm. Did that like give you, and tell me if I'm adding too many words to this, was that, like, to achieve a sense of safety, like, within the social construct of faith or something like that? Or like for you personally, what made certainty something that you needed to hang it, or that you hung on to at that time?
I mean, for sure that was, like, in my social framework. That was the expectation kind of everyone. And I think there's some level of culturally that makes things maybe feel a little bit safer. You know, because if you just have black and white answers for everything, there's no need to get to know people who are different than you or learn about different experiences. You can have an answer, check off an issue, have your thought about something, and move on. And I learned, like, that makes life, one, very dull. But two, like, it kills a lot of, I think that's an easy way to, like, kill hope and kill empathy and all these things that are very deep core values of mine. I think having to be so certain about everything does not make any room for that.
That's interesting you say that, because, I mean, we have similar backgrounds, but part of the knowing the truth opened up, I mean, the message, at least in our context, was because we know the truth, therefore there is hope because we know the truth. So I'm curious your perspective and how that kind of closes off the opportunity to hold on to truth or expansion.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. That was definitely the narrative. For me, what I've come to is that any one person has a fairly narrow experience of the world. You know, it's your experience in this specific context you're in. So to think that everybody else who has ever existed, you know, whether it's outside of your, you know, faith context or whatever, that they're just wrong about everything, like, to me, that just, like, even saying it out loud feels kind of like a heavy, oppressive sort of thing. You know, I don't have to agree with everyone's values or how they approach life or whatever, but I think if you come back to, you know, some basic things, like, we're humans and we deserve to be treated with dignity and respect and kindness and empathy. There's so much to be learned from, you know, everyone and all these different experiences. You know, I don't have to incorporate all of those things into my life, but there are core things that I think unite us.
Absolutely. I agree. And this kind of, like, is bringing up the idea of kind of expansion in what you know to be true or your current experience. And you are a chef and you are a creator. And, you know, how has your certainty in your craft kind of informed or influenced your ability to learn and expand? Like, you know how to make a damn good egg or like a damn good salad or a charcuterie board or like things that I don't even know about because I don't know too much about food. How have you stayed kind of close to and have... How have you stayed close to your own growth and hope in your own craft?
Sure. So I was actually thinking about this today, like, because it's, you know, running a business, you know, that's food related, and I imagine probably other businesses too, but I'll speak for myself. It's this balance between, like, following the rules and also playing and, you know, experimenting. So you will not find me experimenting with things like, you know, food safety or accounting. Like, to me, those are rules. And I've got my set of values and, like, so integrity, kindness, curiosity, creativity, beauty, inclusion, those things, those are important to me. But, like, within those, there's so much room to play around. You know, like, there are an infinite number of cakes you can make. There are so many ways you can make a cake. And there are, like, an infinite number of amazing cakes, you know, just because, you know, I make one differently, that doesn't make it bad or wrong. Like, there are certain things that a cake needs, and, you know, so the rules that you follow and then play, you know, and you can adjust, you know, what you want your final product to be. You want a cake in the end, or you want, you know, I think it's a good analogy for business too, like the way I run things. Like, I know the environment that I want to create. So how do we get there? Well, I've got these ingredients of my core values, but let's play around with proportions and, you know, like, throw some other stuff in there. And yeah, it's all about, like, the balance of the rules and the play, I think.
I love that. And I feel like you just gave words to the thing that I've been kind of wrestling with, or just, I think you and I talked about this. We just had a Light Word Together retreat, and this is a shameless ad for our Light Word Together community group, where we meet twice a month and we talk about empowerment and self-improvement. And it's a super dynamic, on fire group of humans from all across the country.
Lightword.com/together.
And now back to our schedule programming. So we were talking about the Light Word Together retreat, about, like, being able to be kind of digestible for the public. And then when, like, because we have kind of this achiever mindset and we, like, we're entrepreneurial, we're all these different things. And I have found myself really wanting to be able to do things where people can kind of conceptualize enough or digest mm-hmm. enough. And then, so those are reminding me of the rules that you're talking about. Like, there are societal, human, interpersonal rules that, like, if you are just out of those rules, then one, it might be dangerous. And two, it might be, like, not acceptable for folks or inviting for folks to participate. And then experimenting and playing around with what else that can do. Has that always been your kind of cocktail of like approach to business. Like, okay, I got to follow the rules and I want to be intentional about making sure that it's digestible for folks, both literally, physically, and metaphorically.
Nice.
But also, have you also had a really kind of fascination or curiosity about how you can play with the different modalities of fun in your food?
No, actually. When I started my business, I kind of did it to prove myself to prove to myself that I couldn't do it. So I studied economics in college. So lots and lots of business case studies. Many of those are about restaurants. So I know the statistics of restaurant failure. I know from like purely on paper, starting a restaurant like doesn't really make a lot of sense. But it was just this thing that I kept coming back to. And this opportunity came up that I couldn't refuse. So I literally put on my calendar a failure date. Like, by this date, I will be out of business. No question in my mind. And that date came and I was profitable a while before then, actually. And I'm like, shoot, okay. Like, I think I'm proving myself wrong. This can work. But at that point, at the same time, I was also, there was a kind of a transition between, like, I had done a lot of contract cooking, so like private chef kind of stuff, you know, but a lot of those were like friends or people who knew me or like friends of friends. So I think in the back of my mind, it was like, well, are these people just hiring me because they know me, they feel bad for me, you know? And then I got to the point where I'm like, wow, but like most of my customers I had no connection to, you know, like with weddings, be like they found me online. And then there was this sort of like middle period of, okay, say catering a wedding. If somebody wants to hire me, like I can't say no. Because if I say no to this person, nobody is ever going to want to hire me ever again. Like actually makes sense now that I say it, but I think it's just sort of a scarcity mindset. So I kind of look at it as this like upward swing where now I finally realized like it doesn't do anybody any favors if I take clients with that mindset, you know, so like it needs to feel good to everybody all around. And saying no to one person does not mean that everybody else that I ever cross paths with is not going to want to do business with me, you know? So it was more about like finding my spot, what I'm good at, what I really like doing. And then I think because then I was more settled into who I am and what I love to do and the way I love to do it, that's when the playfulness started to come out. But that's also really when my business started to grow. And when I felt this like internal sort of expansion happening. So I thought I was going into business, like doing it the right way, following all the rules and doing all the things. And I realized once I just really narrowed in on what turns out is just a very small set of values and make all my decisions through that, like it just all opens up.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. Okay, so making sure that I understand like the sequence of events, because it sounds like there are a couple transition points here. You went in, it sounds like very sure that you were going to fail. And I realize you had the failure day, but I actually want to ask a question about that.
Yeah.
Harkening back, and honestly, did it feel like, let me ask you this the other way. Was there a part of you that suspected that you wouldn't? Or did you truly think like, I'm going into this and 100% of me knows that I will be done at this point?
I think there was part of me that knew I could do it. But if I put that on paper, that I would fail. Then if I didn't, you know, if I like truly let myself like actually feel like, hey, I could really do this. And then I failed. That would be like, ugh. But I think by just keeping that as a tiny little secret thing in my head that maybe I actually can do this, saying on paper that I'm going to fail, like I think that provided me some strange level of safety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. This feels connected to something you mentioned earlier about, well, we were talking about certainty and how that can kill hope and empathy. But what I'm hearing is you had a hope and you were protecting that in kind of an unconventional way, but you did it and that hope blossomed in the strange kind of safety you created. That's super cool. Is that a fair way to describe that, or would you put it differently?
I think so. Yeah, I think that is.
So we started from a point where, like, you had a secret hope that you protected by saying, like, it's okay if I fail on this day and I expect to. We started from there. You started from there. And then you started to have data indicating that you were good at this. And then you isolated the handful of things that you really wanted to hold to and then discovered creativity around that. Is that sequence correct?
Yeah, that feels right. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. At what point? Well, okay. So describe for me the traversal from, like, that second point to that third point, like the opening up of experimentation and creativity and play, because I could imagine, like, for someone else, that could feel like risking the thing that maybe only just barely came into being. Like, what was the traversal like into, cool, I'm here, now I'm going to play with this and I feel safe enough to do that? Or I'm making guesses here about language, but what did that feel like? What did that traversal feel like into the space of creativity and play and experimentation?
Sure. Well, it came about kind of almost from two opposite ends. One, I had an event not go as well as I had hoped. And that was just, I almost shut down my business. I really, like, I think there's some level of perfectionism in every entrepreneur and catering, like, depending on the kind of an event, it's really a one-shot thing. So if it doesn't go perfectly, like, I really internalize that. So after this, I was like, oh my goodness, like, I can't do this. I'm a fraud. I just need to shut down my business, you know. And I have a few, you know, other friends who are caterers, restaurant owners and stuff. And I talk to them and they're like, hey, like, one, you know, this wasn't all on you. Like, there were outside factors, but two, like, just figure out, like, you need to zero in on what you're doing, why you're doing it, like, what are your values? And I realized in hindsight, the event that I had taken, I took knowing that I shouldn't have. And I was like, well, I'll do it. It's decent money. I don't have a great feeling about it, but, you know, extra money couldn't hurt, right? And I've since learned, like, never, ever, ever, ever will I take an event purely just based on finances. Like, the money needs to make sense, but that is not my primary value. And anytime I've made a decision solely based on money, it has been the wrong one every single time. So just being clear on my values, like, it didn't feel right in my gut. I didn't listen to that, but on paper it made sense. So it was the learning that I have a good sense of intuition, which has at times been a struggle to honor. I really, really, you know, have worked on trying to honor that. And that, so there was that side of it. And then on the other side, I realized kind of how I was still protecting hope and, you know, like, putting out good food that I was proud of, but not really. Say I'd put together a tasting menu or something, I would come up with this, like, wild menu, and then I'd cut it in half because that's what was digestible. And I'm like, do I really want to keep doing that? Like, do I only want to be digestible? Like, is that really what I'm going for? So kind of the, like I said, sort of both, to me, that feels like sort of opposite ways to approach it. Yeah, I realized just figuring out, like, what the heck are my values? And do I want to live as this subdued version of myself? Or am I just going to do my thing? And whoever resonates with that, great. And if people don't, like, that's okay too. Like, my food is not for everyone. That's okay. That doesn't mean that I change and adjust things along the way. But that doesn't mean I'm going to become, you know, a fast food chain. Like, if some people like that, that's not me. That's not what I want to do. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. When you hold the question, either past tense, like when you did hold this question, or when you hold it right now, like, do I just want to be digestible? What is, like, is there an answer in words, or is the answer a feeling, or?
Well, no, I don't want to just be that, you know, I want to be like the truest version of myself. And there's still that part of me that's like, well, I have to look at, you know, the market where I'm at too, and what that can hold. So there is some sense of balance, but I think the closer we can get to the truest version of ourselves, and the closer we can hold to our values, the better. I mean, it's better for everyone that way, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's funny that you said that on paper, that event that wasn't kind of good in your gut ended up not being good in real life. And actually you wrote down on paper afterwards kind of the cycle, or kind of the, what's the word? The process in which you'll say yes or no. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it starts off with, like, I don't have it in front of me, but like, does it feel good in my gut? And if it doesn't, the answer is no every time. But if it feels good in my gut, like, I go through things like, does it make sense financially? Because, you know, I'm still running a business, so I need to make it make sense that way. But not always. Like, if that doesn't mean every single event I do has to be a great budget. I also, like, my values is giving back. So I do a lot of events that are charitable, and I love doing that. So, but that has to be balanced by, you know, events that do make sense financially. And then there's like, do I actually want to do this thing? And if I don't, I'm not going to do it. Like, it's, again, it's not going to be good for anyone if I'm doing something begrudgingly. And there are aspects of business that everybody has that they don't love. But I think the more time I spend in the things that I actually like to do, the better. Like, I'm a better person that way. Yeah, I keep going back to the truer version of yourself you can be, the better it is for everyone. Mm-hmm.
And the truest version of yourself, we've talked about this before that I kind of want to touch on, is this ability and this kind of necessity, this need to create spaces within your business, which is in the restaurant business, that are safe and equitable and caring for your employees, because that's sometimes not the case. Has that been a journey for you as well, to get to a point where you're like, nope, like, I'm going to make sure that you feel safe here in such a kind of a cutthroat industry? Yeah. What's been your journey around that?
It has been a journey. I've always known from the first time I ever hired anyone, and I was very clear about it up front, like, this is going to be a safe space. It's very common, you know, I've worked in places where it'd be like the grabby old man. You talk to your boss and they're like, well, customer's always right. Like, no, not actually though. Nope. So I've always just said, you know, like, there's no amount of money in the world that it is worth it to me to have my employees feel unsafe. It's just not worth it. I don't care. Just not worth it to me. So how that's played out, like, that's definitely been a process, you know. I talked about, you know, different proportions of ingredients to get the recipe. So I know I want my restaurant to be a safe, kind, inclusive, beautiful, welcoming space. So sometimes that requires a little bit more like direct communication with customers. Sometimes, you know, it requires different things in different contexts. So that's been a journey, but it's always been very, very clear in my mind, like, what the end result, what I want that to be.
Yeah. That makes sense. Was that something that you held at the beginning, or to ask this a different way, like, beginning from the failure date point to now, when you are treating your internal restaurant environment in this way, like, what was that timeline flow evolution like?
I think I've always known, like, if I have a restaurant, if I own a business, it will be a safe environment. Like, I think probably the biggest thing in that process has been learning to trust myself and learn to like use my words, you know, and sometimes saying to a customer like, hey, actually, you don't get to talk to my employees that way. That's not what we do here. I'm like, well, I'll leave you a bad review. Okay. If you feel like you need to do that, like, that's okay. But this is not the space where that's going to happen. So just being confident in the environment and the space that I want to create.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that sounds like a non-negotiable for you. Is that correct?
100%. Yes.
It's awesome. Backing up from like just the restaurant business, do you have, I'm actually know what question I want to ask here. I'm curious about like non-negotiables for your life. I'm curious about rules versus experimenting for your larger personhood. I know that you like are genuinely and truly yourself in the restaurant context. I know that's true expression of you. In the other areas where you find expression, or if we just back up entirely, I don't know. I'm just curious about the whole realm of like self-trust and rules versus experimentation and non-negotiables for life. Can you talk to me about whatever piece of that sounds interesting to you at the moment?
Well, for sure. Like probably my core, if I had to boil it down to two core values, I would say integrity and love. And I think I've been thinking about that a lot lately. I think those might be two sides of the same coin. But to me, like if you don't have integrity, I don't care if you've got all the money in the world, like what's like, who cares? If you don't have love, like not a lot means much either, you know? And I don't think that means like, you know, not having, well, I'll back up a second. I don't need to impose my values on other people. And also there's some extent to which if my values don't resonate with somebody else, like that's probably not going to be someone I'm going to have a close relationship with. You know, if we can't agree on basic human decency, you know, treating each other with kindness, like that's probably not going to be somebody I'm going to be close to, you know? So I think integrity and kindness, it doesn't mean I'm a doormat. I work on having good boundaries, but I think those are, if I had to boil it down, yeah, integrity and love for sure. And how that plays out is different in, you know, every situation, but I would hope that at the end of the day, and I think, you know, different facets of yourself come out in different contexts, but I would hope at the end of the day that people who know me can all get together in a room without me being there. And if they talked about me, nobody would be like, what? No, that's not Rebecca. You know, like I hope how people experience me is relatively continuous, regardless mm-hmm. of the context.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Not to ask a naive question, but I'm going to. Why? Like, why is that important to you?
Why is that important to me? I just feel like at the end of the day, if you don't have integrity, what I mean when I say that, and somebody said this to me a long time ago, so I cannot take credit for that, but and they always do this hand motion too, like your insides match your outsides. You know, so what I tell you is what I mean. I am who I say I am. So yeah, I just feel like if you're not coming from that place, it's hard to trust much about someone. And for me, like trust is so important. You can work through a lot of the specifics of, you know, situations and changes and all sorts of things, but if you're not coming at it from a place of, you know, offering integrity and operating integrity, that feels like a bit of a dead end to me.
That totally makes sense. I resonate with that super strongly. It feels to me like part of the, not to overstate it, but I think this might be accurate. This feels like how the universe is built. And if a piece of the universe can't be trusted to do what it says it's going to do, it doesn't get to be a part of what happens next. I resonate super strongly with what you're saying. And I love seeing you like personally as a human walking the planet, and also abstractly as whatever a business is, like a construct of people and ideas moving through time. Like I so much respect. I'm so excited you're doing what you're doing.
Rebecca, you talked about being a learner and always curious. What have you been learning in general that you've been kind of excited about or has kind of opened your eyes in recently? I know you love to read, and I'm just curious if there are any kind of facts or things that you've learned that have kind of shifted your perspective about life or kind of wowed you, or because I'm always curious about learning random shit.
Sure. Well, I just finished this book called Notes from a Young Black Chef. It's been an intentional thing over the last few years to learn from people of color. I think anti-racism work is, so important and something that we all take part in. And, I've got a kid and I want things to be getting better. So if I'm not actively doing that work in myself, it's not going to happen accidentally. So it was a fascinating book, both from the culinary perspective, but also to hear these beautiful, heartbreaking, all these stories from the perspective of a young Black chef. And there's also this book that I've been reading. It's on, I don't remember the name of it, but it's written by a baker and a perfumer. And it talks about two people. And it talks about some of the science behind flavors. And it's just absolutely fascinating stuff that intuitively I knew, but I didn't know why. And some stuff that, that I didn't, but it's so cool to hear about, think about a perfumer, the way they're thinking about flavors and scents is totally different than the way I would approach it. But I feel like that's just added a lot of depth to my understanding of, food. And yeah, it's super cool. I'll find out what it's called and I will let you know. It's fascinating.
Yeah. We'll link it in the show notes. That'd be awesome.
That's super cool. We had a neat moment this last weekend where you, I was lucky enough to be in the room where you shared with someone the flavor profile that they seemed like to you. And a lot of the ideas that we're talking about here are, I think, really broadly applicable, but it's also true that as physical humans, we come into the world with really specific giftings, and you have that. Can you talk about your relationship I'm going to get all the words wrong if I said your relationship to flavor and how that sounds to me almost synesthetic, it's connected to the way you feel around people and things like that. Could you just talk to me about all of that and how you relate to it?
I think looking at things through the lens of flavor profile, and I'm always thinking about flavor profiles just all the time. It just adds a lot of complexity and depth to things. Sweet is a one note kind of flat thing, but you talk about the floral and the citrus and the little salty note and maybe the little piquancy. There's just so many dimensions to things. And people are that way too. And I don't meet somebody and go, oh, there's some spice, that's not how I always think of, people, but yeah, it kind of plays into that curiosity too. What's possible here? What are the dimensions that I'm not thinking of? What's possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you always had that relationship to flavor? You say now you're always thinking about flavor profiles. Did that develop over time or have you always been that way?
It's definitely something that's grown, but I think I always thought of things that way. And I could always people ask how I develop recipes and I always say, well, I taste them in my head. And that's truly, truly where stuff starts for me. And most of the time, it actually does taste the way it tastes in my head. Sometimes not. And I'm like, whoa, whoops. But yeah, I taste things in my head. I recently learned that's not a thing that everybody does. So
that's incredibly freaking cool. Okay. Challenge question. Let's see where this goes. If the truth of who you are was a flavor profile, what would that be?
I think it would probably have kind of a mellow start. Definitely some spice in there. Some citrus, for some brightness, a little surprise there at the end. Yeah, in the middle there would be just some savory umami. There would be some umami in there too. Yeah, it'd be kind of a little bit of little up and down and some little bright notes in there.
Yeah. Is flavor always a function of time? Like you're describing this like at the beginning, in the middle. Is that a time thing or does it stack differently? I mean, I'm curious about the technical side of this too.
I mean, I guess I do think of it in terms of time often. I suppose that doesn't have to always be the case. But for me, yeah, flavor often follows like kind of a linear. Although there are times when there are two things at once and they're like opposites going on. So
neat.
I love that.
I'm one of the things that I do compulsively is try to take an idea and apply it to, just for the experiment of it, like apply it to every other part of life just to see in what places it fits and what places it doesn't. And that kind of treatment that you're giving, I don't know, like I would be excited to see how do I want to say this? In the same way that one might construct an art gallery and walking through that gives you like the timeline, like the life story of that artist, it'd be cool to like taste your way through a story as an experience, like whether that's your story or the story of your restaurant or anything else. Exciting. Cool. Thank you for sharing.
Speaking of stories, I want to touch a little bit on your story, just kind of briefly, and to the extent at which you'd like to share. You've been through a lot in your life, and a reason why I was excited to have you on this podcast is you're just such a resilient and powerful person. And I'm curious, how has your story kind of shaped you today as a mother, as a business owner, as a person? And you can kind of take that however you want, however much you want to share. And how has your story kind of shaped you?
Well, I guess I'll just jump right in. And without going into tons of details, just kind of an overview about coming up on 9 years ago, I think it was now, 2012, November 2012, I left a very violent marriage. Yeah, as someone who, I don't know, I always sort of honestly like judge people who, like, I'd hear about people who are in situations of domestic violence and either was like, well, I don't know why they stayed. I would never do that. Or like, how did that happen to them in the first place? They must have been stupid. Like, just be, and I do not look at it that way anymore, but that was my framework. And then find myself in a very violent situation, going through all of the reasons, you know, I stayed for a long time. I convinced myself that it was my fault. Just all the things that people go through in that sort of situation, like I went through too. And I was like, huh. Well, okay, like this is not so outside of me and this is not such an uncommon experience as I thought. And you don't have to be stupid to end up in a situation like that. It's domestic violence, I think, is very much more common than probably we would like to admit to ourselves. But yeah, so I left this situation with like very little. And at that point, my reason for leaving, I didn't even at that point value myself enough to leave for myself. I had, you know, my daughter who's 10 now was 15 months old at the time. And it really was a matter of life or death. And so I left. I left thinking I was going to be gone for a weekend. And I think I even remember talking to you like right around that time, Isaac, and truly thinking it was going to be like maybe a couple weeks because, you know, my now ex, like if someone left me, I'd go, shit, what do I have to do? Like, how do I fix this? What do I have to do? And so I sort of expected a similar response and that didn't come, you know, and had started counseling around that time too and started unraveling things and quickly realized actually how dark it really was. And actually, the day that I left, I had planned to kill myself. Like that's how bad things were, and not in the I'm going to escape this way. But my ex had me so convinced that like who I was, like my essence, was broken and evil and damaging to my daughter. And like I love Mara more than anything, you know. So the thought of like my presence damaging her was like soul crushing. And I was like, I just have to do whatever I have to do to give her the best chance to thrive. Yeah. So it's a really, like, looking back, I'm so grateful that didn't happen, obviously. Mm-hmm. But like that domestic violence, like abuse, like that really messes with your head and like mm-hmm. and convince you that things like that are true. You know, I mm-hmm. thought that was the problem. Yeah. So it was a very dark, very dark time. And it took a lot of unlearning and relearning and fighting myself and my counselor at times. And, you know, just like a lot of rebuilding. I have this picture of myself like a few weeks after I left, and it's not a good picture at all. Yeah. It's sad to look at. I was gaunt, like physically, and the light was just completely, there was no sparkle at that point. But I keep it as a reminder to myself of how far I've come. Because it has been a long way, you know, and it's been a hard journey and a lot of ups and downs and all over the place, and like plenty of weeks of going, crap, I have $20 to feed me and Mara for 2 weeks. How am I going to do this? How are we going to make it work? Yeah. Plenty of days of, you know, crying myself to sleep and going, I don't know how to do this.
Yeah.
But at some point it switched from, you know, my motivation to get out of bed as Mara to like, I learned to love myself and that I was like, I was worth leaving for too, because I didn't deserve that. And nobody deserves to feel like the very core of their essence is just. And so a big part of like why I am the way I am today is because it was sort of like I drew a line in the sand, like on my watch, nobody is ever going to feel that. I am going to, even though like there were people who, well-meaning people, who were like, oh, it's just a shame you have a broken family now, you know, things like that, that were like crushing to me at the time. But what I realized, yes, maybe like, yes, there's brokenness in my past. Would it be ideal if, you know, all of that hadn't happened? Absolutely. Would I wish that on anyone? No. However, it did clarify my values. It showed my strength and my resilience. You know, I didn't want to teach Mara the lesson of like, you can say no in this powerful a manner, but she knows, like she knows you don't have to be abused for one. That, you know, like she's seen strength in action in ways that I definitely didn't feel like displaying it, but you know, that's what life handed me. So could either fight what was, which is kind of what I think staying in the relationship, what that was doing, you know,
it was
fighting reality. Or you can go, all right, here's the cards we've got. So I decided very shortly after I left, I was like, I'm going to come out of this a better person than when I entered. And there were times like I thought it would break me. And then I didn't think I could do it. And I had no idea, like, how the hell am I going to end up a better person after all of this? Because I feel like I've been through a freaking meat grinder. But, and that's, I think, some of that, too, now that I'm saying it, that's part of why integrity is so important to me. Like, that's, it was in that time, I'm making connections I hadn't really made before. But I was doing counseling, like, shortly before leaving, just started. And that's when I got that illustration of integrity for the first time. And up to that point, integrity had always been important to me. But when it was pointed out to me that like me showing to the world, you know, or pretending to the world that everything was okay, that I had this, you know, healthy, safe marriage, when in reality I'm being, you know, abused behind closed doors, like that wasn't me having integrity. And that, like, when I heard that at first, I got really mad because it felt like blame. And that, looking back, it wasn't blame. That was a really gentle and kind invitation to hope and possibility. And like, it doesn't have to be this way. But you have to step into like what is actually true. You have to step into integrity. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of where that stemmed from. Like, yeah.
You know, I think, well, first of all, thank you for sharing all that. I think that it's a really powerful example of one, just things that happen to us sometimes and situations that we find ourselves in. And also that there is hope and also the ability to kind of move on and heal, even if it's like really tragic. You said stepping into integrity. And I feel like that journey for you has been that in the last 10 years is stepping into your own integrity, which then has invited people into stepping into their own integrity with your business, with Mara. Like, I love seeing Mara strut her like confident self, 10-year-old, 11-year-old self, because there's a confidence in her that has been given to her by you and also herself that feels like integrity manifest, right? Like manifested, you know, like this is who she is. And we celebrate that and we honor and kind of lift her up in that. And I mean, what a beautiful gift that you have given to her and also yourself. But that's just a really powerful story. So I wanted to bring it up because it's such, like you said, there are probably people listening who have had some sort of experience like that. And I think it's important to not ignore that and also give them hope and give ourselves hope that, you know, there is possibility for healing, and because it's really beautiful.
Can I just say to listeners, you know, if there's somebody out there who has that feeling of like, it's that kind of soul crushing, if I just keep my head down, withdraw into myself, eventually they'll stop. It's my fault that this is happening. Like, that's not true. You don't deserve it. There is help. Please reach out to someone. There are so many survivors out there, but you know, I'm one who like didn't think I'd live to 30. I'm almost 35 now, thriving, you know, not to say that there's not hard stuff, but like it doesn't, even if leaving, and for me, leaving was the scariest thing I have ever done. Like, and to be fair, it's the first step in a lot of hard steps, but there is so much hope beyond. So please, please, please reach out to somebody.
Thanks.
I don't even know what word to use here. Like the through line of hope in this conversation, but also in you, right? The mm-hmm. through line of hope and that story and of confidence and certainty too, in a way. Like, and tell me how you feel about this, but I feel like you've traded certainty that was handed to you, maybe by the faith community or whatever, traded that for certainty that is like native to you and alive. Like I feel surety in you and in what you say, but it's not like a dead fixed surety. Like it's got movement and aliveness and flavor and all of that. Does that make sense? What do you think?
It does. Yeah, I would agree. I think my certainty, it feels more like grounded and steady maybe. And instead of operating largely out of a place of fear, which are where I did spend a lot of my life, it's from a sense of like hope and curiosity and like there's this deep kind of inner knowing, like, yeah, it's this kind of settled sort of confidence, even if I don't have the like external answers. I don't know. It feels just settled. I don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I hear it. I see it. I feel it. It's been my joy to see that.
And it's
over the years.
Yeah. It's been cool to see that. Like you're doing the work. It's not just like, oh, I woke up one day and I felt confident. It's like, you've put in fucking 10 years
chosen
of
this.
The ups and downs of moving through it. You know, we just had a podcast episode talking about the difference between what was it? Moving through something because you have to and moving through something through choice. Courage. No, bravery.
It was strength versus courage. The idea that strength in this idea is like shouldering your way through something that because you just have to, the job that you think that you just have to stay in, or the relationship maybe, versus courage being, I don't have to take this route. Like, I could stay and suffer and exist through strength, or I could make a real choice.
And you've done both. You've had courage and strength, which is super, super dope.
Can I say one thing about that? A tool that has been so useful for me, and again, somebody gave this to me, cannot take credit. And this was very helpful in leaving an abusive relationship, but it's been helpful in so many things since. It was just the fact that, you know, when I can continue to do what I've always done, and we know what this produces, but I can try this new thing, which is super scary. And if it doesn't work out, like, I can go back, you know, like always, even if there wasn't in reality a chance that I was going to go back to that relationship, giving myself permission to say, I can go back to what I know, you know, like that's just been such a helpful thing, to switch from that sort of just gutting your way through everything because you have to like, I actually have some freedom and some agency in this.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. This reminds me again of the idea of protecting hope, like give it space to run, but it's not like the world is riding on it working the first time or anything like that. Even I'm still in love in a way with the idea of the fail date, and not for the, like, I don't know, like someone on the external who didn't see the entire thing could read that as pessimistic, but I love it for the protection of hope. And there are a million ways to phrase that and to construct that, but to treat your own hope in the way that you have, and to arrive at the sparkle that is now like riding at the level that it's riding with you is wonderful. And I'm so delighted. And we're wrapping up. And so there are two questions to close with. And the first one is, what does an empowered Rebecca look like and feel like?
I would say confident. I always feel like, for me, I think it's just this kind of quiet confidence. I don't think I'll ever be like a super boisterous person, and I'm okay with that. Trusting my intuition and my knowing, sparkly, not, I feel like as I grow, maybe less and less the need to protect hope. Like it's this tiny little thing at first, but then as I grow, it needs less and less protection and it's more resilient.
So because it's a part of you.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that.
Oh, that's so cool.
And lastly, what do you know for sure?
I know that in general, when I operate under the assumption, like when I make generous assumptions, I'm a better human. If I assume, you know, largely that people are doing their best, I can operate from a place of generosity and curiosity and kindness and empathy. And, you know, yeah, there are times when people are not, you know, safe people. That's another thing. But I'm a better human when I worry about, you know, how I'm framing things rather than what other people are doing.
Yeah, totally. Rebecca.
Rebecca. Both at the same time.
Rebecca.
Rebecca, I love you dearly. It's such a privilege to be like your friend and to be around and to be able to chat in this way. Thank you.
For those of you who are listening, check out Mara's Cafe in Wisconsin. Rebecca has incredible food, and you're an incredible person. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us today, and we will see you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for having me. Love you both.
Bye.
Bye.
Y'all, the whole point of everything is to open up ourselves in all the fullness we are made for, and then to create with everything that is real and true and bright. That's the work of a life. That's what we're working on. And you're here because you feel that for yourself, too. And we believe in you completely.
Thanks for joining us this round. And hey, for every conversation in this series, including this one, we've assembled a downloadable set of notes, table questions, a journal prompt, and some action steps that you can use to bring the energy and the lessons of this conversation home to your own life. Head to our podcast website, empoweredhumanacademy.com.
Hey, thank you for being here. Now, get out there and do something that feels exactly like you. We will do the same.
And for us, that includes bringing you the next conversation. We cannot wait.
Have an awesome, awesome day.